at a classical example, the constitutions of the various countries of the West. Take the American Constitution, written by the most trusted minds and most enlightened minds of the 18th century. They sat down and wrote the Constitution for the United States of America. In it, in Article 1, Section 2, entitled the Three-Fifths Compromise, they state that black men were to be considered three-fifths of a white man. This is the Constitution of the United States of America, which is encased in glass in Washington. You can go to people make pilgrimage to Washington to look at this document written by the founding fathers of America. This is what they wrote. Still there, they're not removing it. They've amended it. They're not working according to it today. They've amended it, but because that document has reached the status of revelation for them, they keep it exactly as it is. So you can go and read it. Of course, the mind of this time in America rejects it. It is unjust. It is unfair. It is making black Americans not quite human. Only three-fifths of a human being. This is the product of human mind coming to the best that they can. Because human minds, when they come together to try to decide what is good, what is best, they always make decisions based on class interest, family interest, national interest, tribal interest, which is what happens. And this is why Islam is fundamentally opposed to this. It's a basic principle of democracy. Because Allah, who created human beings, is the only one who can enjoy laws which are not a part and parcel of interest, feelings or interests which are being served. It is free of class, national, caste, etc. The second principle in democracy is that there must be a free arena for discussion and consent. Meaning, everybody, when they get together to make a decision, has to come there not believing that he or she has the absolute truth. There's no absolute truth. We come, we sit down, everybody throws out the idea which we all agree on, this now becomes the best. No absolute. Whereas again, from an Islamic perspective, there are absolute truths. The Sharia just presents absolute truth. Not this. Not the interpretation and application of Sharia, it's not absolute truth. But Sharia, revelation, Quran and Sunnah, this is absolute truth. So there's a fundamental difference here. What does this mean in practical terms? In practical terms, it means that the West has no solid foundation for morality in society. What was bad yesterday is good today. What is good today can be bad tomorrow. That is Western morality, in a constant state of upheaval, constantly changing. This is why, for example, when we consider the pressure being applied to the society, in Western society, Western civilization, by the homosexuals, and how that society has caved in, it is obvious that the society is incapable of
establishing a solid basis for morality. 30 years ago, if the average American was asked, what is your view on homosexuality? He or she would answer, it is an abomination unto the Lord. This is their view. This is from the Bible. But today, if you ask the average American, what do you think about homosexuality? He says, it's a personal choice. It's a personal choice. People should be free to choose what they want to choose. How? How could it be that 30 years ago, in the psychiatrist's Bible, psychiatrists have a book, a main book, the main book of psychiatry, in which they identify all of the ailments and illnesses, they refer to it as the psychiatrist's Bible. In it, homosexuality was identified as a mental illness, and they had prescribed treatments for it. Shock treatments, drug treatments, you know, psychoanalysis, all kinds of things. But when that Bible was rewritten a decade ago, homosexuality was removed from the group of illnesses, and it was replaced by another illness. What is this illness that they replaced it with? This illness is called homophobia. What is homophobia? Homophobia is the dislike of homosexuals. To hate a homosexual and his activities, to despise and to speak out against it, this is now classified as an illness, homophobia, and these are the people who now need to be treated by the psychiatrist. How can that be? How can that happen? It happens because the foundations of determining what is right and what is wrong morally in the society is not absolute truth, divine revelation, which cannot be changed, but human agreement. The basic principle which governs these kind of family affairs. And when I say, I call it family affairs because now it is defined as family affairs. In America today, in the primary schools, in the major cities, they have books which are being taught, books for children, prepared especially for children, teaching about family affairs, and it's called My Two Dads. My Two Dads. This is real. Children at the age of 6 and 7 and 8 are being taught that you could have two dads, two moms, a mom and a dad, a mom or a dad. All of that is family. So they commonly don't even refer to issues of mom and dad anymore. They say parents. Single parents or parents. This state of affairs is the product of a line of reasoning which developed with regard to fornication and adultery. When they began to correct their legal system and remove fornication and adultery from the law book, they devised a principle. This principle was called consenting adults. The principle. Meaning, whatever takes place between consenting adults, the state has no right to interfere with. To try to interfere is to try to bring religion into family life. So, they say, the foundation is the principle of consenting adults. Two adults, whatever they agree to do between themselves, whether it be two males, two females, or a male and a female, then it is their right. Of course, they began with a male and a female. But Eventually, because they opened that door, then two females and two males had the right to demand civil rights. So that opened up the door for them. And Sweden, in terms of the evolution of Western thought, and along this line, Sweden has taken this thought to the pinnacle. In Sweden, incest is removed from the law books as a crime. Meaning a man having relations with his mother, his sister, or his daughter, as long as they're adults, it is not a crime. And this is where democracy is headed. And Islam stands firm. Islam, the teachings of Islam stand firm against this thought, this way of thinking, this type of morality. This is why I said from the very beginning that only Islam stands in the way of secular democracy. All of the other civilizations, Chinese civilization, when it became communist, it became a part and parcel of Western civilization. Because communism is secular democracy. The rule of the proletariat. That's the democracy. And it is secular. The communists were even rougher on Muslims than any other people. Religious people of all types, but Muslims in particular. Indian society, they became secular also. Only Islam has the necessary components for a civilization which can oppose Western domination, Western cultural domination, and the West recognizes it. The West recognizes it. This is why they focus their attacks on anywhere where Islam seems to be coming to the forefront. This is why when in Algeria it appeared that Muslims were going to come to rule that country through democratic means, through elected means, the FIS is about to win. When the military stepped in and canceled the election, the West was silent. They were silent. Why? When they're always talking about democracy, democracy. Why were they silent? Because it wasn't secular democracy. The point. Secularism is primary. This is the most important consideration. And democracy secondary. But they're two together. And this is why the move in Turkey, the attitude of America towards Turkey, supporting that military dictatorship. Supports it. Why? Because they maintain secularism. And you found Bush when Russia fell apart, and the Russian state, and some of the Russian states which were Muslim, you know, broke off, started to set up their own system. Bush pointed out, Carter pointed out, we hope that these states will follow the secular democratic example of Turkey. And their aid to these countries is in accordance with their willingness to commit themselves to these principles. So this is the reality of the struggle. But the question is, are Muslims in a position to meet the challenge? In the period of the Crusades, yes. Islamic civilization met the challenge, defeated the Crusaders, and established its hegemony over much of the world. People came to their centers of learning to gain knowledge in Cordoba, in Baghdad, but now the tables are turning. Muslims are not in that position. Politically, the countries are divided up. But he said there is this obsession with bringing Islam to the forefront. If Islam comes to the forefront and countries link up together again, then we have a clear situation of opposition to the domination of Western civilization. But the question still remains for Muslims in most parts of the world, whether they're in Muslim countries or they're in minority situations like here in Trinidad, are they up to the challenge? Even on the most fundamental of levels. The reality is that they're not. They're not because, for the most part, they have become subject to the principle of traditionalism. Traditionalism rules Muslim societies today, whether it be in countries, Pakistan, Egypt, or it be in minorities here, Guyana, elsewhere. Traditionalism rules the community. And traditionalism refers to the concept that we should blindly follow the traditions of our parents. Whatever our parents told us to do, whatever they did, this is what we should continue to do. You are not allowed to question. To question these traditions is considered some kind of deviation and heresy. This is why if somebody who was enlightened to the foundations of Islamic civilization, which is in fact the Quran and the Sunnah, as it was understood by the early generation of Muslim prophets, righteous Muslims, the Sahaba, the Tabi'in, those after them, the characters.